From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Soma.
I'm from Berkeley.
Concord, Cali.
Tenderloin District.
La Mission.
The Mission District.
Noe Valley.
I live in Silver Terrace.
Coming up, a local playwright's search for God leads him to a new philosophy.
The idea of believing in the believing for the sake of believing is not a bad idea. There's something admirable about it, and very sweet and very true and honest about it.
Then we'll visit a place where creativity reigns supreme.
Art and dance and culture is a part of our soul.
And we'll chug along to find out the story behind this week's Audiograph Mystery Sound.
All aboard!
Release the brakes, give the engine a little oil, and we'll be off.
We're right on track. Today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. Tuesday night was the 31st year of National Night Out, an event that aims to help prevent crime by encouraging people to get to know their neighbors and strengthen their communities. We sent reporters to National Night Out gatherings all over the Bay Area to see what was going on. In San Francisco's Visitation Valley, people gathered at Hertz Playground to celebrate its reopening. It was closed for about a month after community member Alan Calloway was shot and killed while playing dodgeball with a group of kids. Pastor Robert Cowan of River of Life Church felt this event could help heal the community.
We're here because the mayor and the police chief wanted to restart this park in light of the past tragedies and let everybody know that it's a safe place and to bring the community together.
Many local police officers were at the playground to show their commitment to protecting the area. BART Police also hosted events at six stations around the Bay Area, like at the Daly City BART stop.
My name is Karen Tate, and I'm a community service officer for BART Police Department.
And what do you think National Night Out does for communities?
It brings awareness to the community of what the police department does, what they offer, and try to get them involved in their own safety as well as us giving them information.
Officers were handing out free gifts like pencils and magnets and fingerprint ID kits, all with BART contact and safety information on them. Over in Oakland's Fruitvale neighborhood, people like community organizer Woods Irvin said they participate in National Night Out to promote alternatives to policing.
It's a PR move that is supposed to be about community building with the cops. And as a member of the community who doesn't believe that there should be cops in our neighborhoods and in our communities, the folks who came together to celebrate tonight are here to build community around alternatives to the cops.
And some, like Michael Canane at the Foothill Night Out in Oakland, say they were there in spite of the police.
Sadly, the police don't work much in this area. We're in the Fruitvale. And so we rely heavily on each other to try to protect the neighborhood.
So you don't see this as like a collaboration with the police?
Did you see any of our BART police officers here? I didn't.
But others like Katrina Garcia in Richmond came because they want the opportunity to get to know their local law enforcers.
I originally thought, okay, can we meet officers? I was like, what does that mean, you know? And then I wonder really what the result is. Do people really want to meet officers, especially in Richmond? There's always this thing, you know, no, we hate the po-po type of thing. And I'm like, well, I like that I can call them.
And some showed up at National Night Out to try to fight crime themselves.
Spider-Man.
Your real name?
My name is Chubba.
Chubba.
Chubba Gabor Bashnier. I was trying to get some, you know, crime awareness, get people to know what's going on in their city. And, you know, so Spider-Man decided to come out here today and get a little extra awareness. It's more fun for the kids, too.
Those voices were brought to you by reporters Lisa Carmack, Suki Lewis, Ryan Miller, Rachel Vasquez, and Liza Veal. If you went to a National Night Out event, let us know how you feel about it, how it went. Call our feedback line at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. 264-7106. This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Community is created around a common neighborhood, but also a common language or a common religion. And that brings us to our next story, which is part of our new reporting project, The Spiritual Edge, Stories of Innovation in Belief and Belonging.
I'm a Muslim.
I am Jewish.
I have no religion.
I'm Christian.
Reform Judaism.
I'm Catholic.
Muslim. Not religious.
Buddhist.
Southern Baptist.
Hindu. Atheist.
Christian.
Agnostic.
Catholic.
Desi Gallegos is a playwright who's searching for God. He's only 18 years old, but says he's already lived through numerous tough life experiences that led him to asking the question, is there a loving God? And if so, why are these bad things, plagues he calls them, happening to me? His new play, God Fights the Plague, explores his search for answers. To do that, he talked to people from 9 different religions and portrays each of them on stage. Gallegos came by our studios, and I asked him why he decided to put such a personal struggle on a public stage.
Please, God, help my mother. Please, God, help my brother. Please, God, help my family. Please, God, help me.
So when I was 17, it was my senior year in high school, and I was dealing with some personal things that that affected me in various ways. My mom, a few years earlier, had been diagnosed with breast cancer. My brother is on the autism spectrum, and I was dealing with a mysterious illness that was affecting my ability to eat certain foods. And so I didn't at the time know that that was what drove my search for religion, but gradually that became clear to me over the course of the project. Basically, I started to think about God. I started to think about how, you know, we live in a world where irrational and pointless things can happen to us all the time. Like we can walk outside and get hit by a car or struck by lightning or, you know, get some random illness like cancer or, you know, this thing that was happening to me. And so that sort of propelled this search where I started to think, you know, how do we respond to these things? And some people respond with, you know, it's all part of God's plan and here and sort of rationalize this irrationality with religion. And so I wanted to go out into the world and find, for me, is there a God? You know, if there is a God, is he a loving God? Can he control and did he create the world? And if he can, if he did, why would he create a world with so many irrational and pointless things? Things that I refer to in my play as plagues, because like the plague, they don't make sense. There's no reason for them. I wanted to see how religion plays out in the lives of everyday individuals. And so I went out and interviewed 16 people of all different religions, including you know, the California State Director of American Atheists, Zaid Shakir, who's the co-founder of one of the first Muslim colleges in the U.S., you know, Sylvia Borstein, who's very well known around here, who's a Buddhist. You know, I interviewed a rabbi who is also and is part-time a singing drag queen. So I interviewed all these people in hopes that I could take something from them and form a philosophy, a religious philosophy that could work with me and help me as I dealt with these plagues. This is what, you know, Muslims believe, that kind of stuff. I wanted to hear how their faith actually played a role in their own lives. And I mean, I've got an incredible story by my atheist who, if you don't mind, if I can share
and
a
now,
bit of the show.
Yeah, I was going to ask you for an example.
All right, great. Yeah. This is a monologue that my atheist gives. And it's the entire show is word for word, every and every what my interviewee said.
And they're all played by you.
That's exactly right. Yes.
It was really a shocking kind of an incident. You know, I was trying to give her CPR and she just died. There was a point where she was trying to hang on and trying to breathe, and then she was just limp. It was pretty obvious what had happened. It was really horrific. But I basically just kind of accepted it as this is the way things are, and I wound up becoming friendly with a woman who owned a cabin down there near the trailhead, and she invited me, after all the rescue people had come and all that stuff was done, she invited me over to her house with her family. I went over, and the first thing they said to me was, "Oh, Patty's probably hiking in heaven now," and I said, "No, we really don't believe in that. I think she's just dead." But yeah, it was very, very traumatic. They put a cross, of all things, up where she died on the trailhead. Thanks a lot.
So that is my atheist. And he completely opened up to me in our interview about, you know, losing his wife, about how he responded to it. And so I was blessed to find these incredible, incredible people who were willing to share their stories with me and be vulnerable with me.
So let's hear from somebody else that we will hear from in the play.
Okay, great. This is another one of my favorite interviewees. She is... I'll let her tell you what she is. Okay.
Having been this radical 1970s feminist, you know, there was no way I was going to find spiritual comfort, you know, with a dude. So whether Buddha or Christ, that was not going to be a go. So I worshiped the goddess. That's completely right where I was at. But then I moved on. Now I think that not being monotheistic is being polytheistic, believing in many different gods, is sort of the core tenet of my belief system. But yeah, that was how I became a witch.
Do you mean for it to sometimes be funny? Can these stories be funny?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Any stories can be funny. Even the darker stories have funny sides. Yes, my witch is... I love her so much because, you know, she's hilarious. And she says so many things that, you know, get huge laughs from the audience. There's an entire segment where she talks about, you know, I work with Elvis. It originally started as a joke with my pagan friends. But, I mean, this is how gods used to become gods. Is there be a story about them and start to take on a life of its own? So, you know, how in 1970s feminist who is a big goddess worshiper became a, you know, keeper of the Temple of Elvis is bizarre, but you know, so there she's this hilarious, you know, smart, brilliant woman, and she gets huge laughs from the audience, and yet there's something very wise about the stuff that she's saying. It's something very interesting, and if you really think about it and take the time to like appreciate it for what it is, the idea of believing in the believing for the sake of believing is not a bad idea. There's something admirable about it, and very sweet and very true and honest about it.
These are very different characters you portray, different people.
Yes.
What, you know, as you perform them, what commonalities are there that you've discovered? Well, wait, hey, these people aren't that much different from one another.
The biggest one I found, and this is one that really spoke to me and feeds into the idea of the play and feeds into what I hope audiences are taking out of the play, is that every single person I interviewed basically taught the same lesson, that the only answer we can give the plague, these irrational things, is love, whether it's love of thy God or love of thy neighbor or, you know, sort of love of thyself. At root, they all sort of believe in a similar higher power. Some call it God, some call it goodness, some call it decency. And some will say that's only the beginning in describing who God is, and some will say that's as far as it goes. But really, they all believe in compassion, empathy, and love. And so I saw that in every single one of them, and that really spoke to me because it can't be coincidence, right? That they're all, it seems to me that they were all getting at in very different ways a human truth, which is that when we empathize with each other, when we hear each other's stories, when we see ourselves in another human being, at least to me, it seems that's when we're closest to God.
That's playwright Desi Gallegos. You can catch his play, God Fights the Plague, this weekend at the Marsh in San Francisco. This interview was part of the new KALW reporting project, The Spiritual Edge. For more, go to spiritualedge.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Exploring life experiences through art can be done on stage, like we just heard, but also through visual arts like painting and crafts. And for adults with developmental disabilities, there's a place in San Francisco that fosters that exploration. Creativity Explored is a thriving studio and art gallery in the Mission, where about 130 artists with developmental disabilities make, show, and sell their work to more than 10,000 visitors a year. Amy Taub is executive director at Creativity Explored.
It's not necessarily what's being expressed, it's how it's being expressed. And it's become a vehicle for people to develop relationships with a very, very broad community that they really would not have had.
In this story from our archives, KALW's Julie Kane visited the Creativity Explored studio and brings us this story.
I'm sitting at a table with Walter Kresnick and Quentin Rodriguez. They're bent over big sheets of paper with pencils and markers and paint.
You guys are both making hearts?
Yeah. Uh-huh. He's making hearts, too.
You're making small versions.
I'm making small, big ones.
We're not talking about the kind of puffy, stylized hearts most at home on Valentine cards or sailors' arms. These are the real deal, anatomically correct hearts, complete with valves and chambers and...
That's the veins. Huh?
Oh, that's the...
That's the anterior view of the heart.
Yeah, that's the veins.
The room we're in is an open space, the size of several classrooms put together. It's full of color and light and activity. Artwork covers the walls and hangs from clotheslines strung up above tables crowded with working artists.
We start early in the morning and then we're really creative. Like, we think of a thought of what we want to draw and we don't copy. We just go for what, you know, people will like it and enjoy it. And it gives us joy.
That's Kevin Roach. He's been making art here for almost 10 years. And right now, he's working on an incredibly intricate drawing of ants. Lots of ants. Each one is outlined in black Sharpie and then colored in with red.
This looks like a lot of work, what you're doing here. How long have you been working on this?
Maybe 3 weeks. We don't rush anything. We like to keep things kind of going, but, you know, make it really kind of beautiful.
And why ants?
Because they're real, and they're a part of our world.
Real and part of our world. That's a pretty good description of what it feels like here, and what Creativity Explored is all about. Visitors are welcomed, and the doors to the studio are wide open.
The really, really important thing in all of our lives is human connection. It's that very, very simple moment when you look into somebody's eyes and you say hello. And that happens on a daily basis here.
Amy Taub has been the executive director at Creativity Explored for 15 years. She says the artists here come from all walks of life. Some have intellectual disabilities, some are on the autism spectrum, some have cerebral palsy, but here they're not defined by their disability. They're artists whose work is collected and exhibited and sold.
In the Bay Area, there's been a real value placed on people's creativity and ways to communicate, and that stemming from the strong belief that all people have something to say.
One of the teachers here is Victor Cartagena. He's a Salvadoran-born artist who's been working in the Bay Area since the 1980s. It's his table where the drawings of ants and hearts are happening.
And I teach what I do in my profession, you know, the way I do my work, that's the way I can just guide them. You know, it's that easy way I can just introduce a new way of seeing it with the simplicity, line, and way of thinking.
Cartagena leans in to look at Walter Kresnick's anatomically correct hearts and gives him a big smile.
Walter tends to do repetition, but every single heart is totally different shape, different size, but it's coming from the same idea.
The hearts represent people who are special to Kresnick. Cartagena asks him who they are and then carefully starts to write the names next to the hearts.
B-I-A?
Bia.
Yeah.
Oh, that's okay.
Right.
Okay. Who else?
At the other end of the table, Kevin Roach takes a break from his drawing, which is now covered with even more ants.
Are you ever surprised at the art you make?
Oh, my God. I am. I'm really shocked. I'm shocked. Sometimes I'm shocked at... That Aina did it.
And that's when I notice what's at the center of each one. A little heart. For Cross Currents, I'm Julie Kane.
A new exhibit, Shoerageous, opens next week at Creativity Explored. To find out more, head to KALW.org and click on Cross Currents. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. All week long on KALW, we've been playing you this sound.
All aboard!
Release the brakes and give the engine a little oil and we'll be off and running.
We asked you what that was and where we recorded it. We sent KALW's Liza Veal up to the Berkeley Hills to bring us the story behind the sound.
My name is Jerry Nicholson. I'm a locomotive engineer here on the Robin Valley Railway.
So if I wanted to talk to you, should I get in the train?
Yeah, why don't you sit with me?
Great.
Here, I'll just sit on this little pad. It'll be easier than that brake wheel.
Perfect. Thanks.
Good. All aboard!
Yeah. So now we're...
So I'm turning the water off. I'm putting some water in the locomotive. I brought the pressure down to 125 pounds.
And then we got some smoldering flames in
Yeah, there. We have a fire. It's actually 3,400 degrees, hot enough to melt glass.
There we go.
Okay, I'm going to blow the whistle again.
So did you used to conduct... big trains, or did you
Yeah,
just
I was an engineer for Southern Pacific out of Oakland. Running one of these locomotives will kind of get it into your blood.
Really?
And you kind of look forward to it, yeah. It's amazing because you just can't find an engine like this anywhere. So once you learn how to operate it correctly, and once you have the ability to come up and enjoy it and run it, it really kind of becomes part of you.
Part of like another limb, another appendage
of
your body.
Yeah, exactly. Then we're going to go into our tunnel.
That was the sound of going through the tunnel. So has this been your aspiration all along?
All along. I've always wanted to do this. Like you have a favorite thing you want to do.
The big trains were just one step on the ladder
to
the real
goal.
Yeah,
that's right. Well, I paid my mortgage, raised a family. Yeah, so the big trains worked out pretty well.
Well, we got a lot of calls on this one, and we found out there are a lot of steam trains around the Bay Area. Our winner this week is Gigi Pagani. Congratulations, we are going to send you a KALW t-shirt. For the rest of you, you'll have another chance to win next week. Want a sneak peek? Take a listen.
So you have 59 seconds left in the game. Looking, throwing in the end zone.
So the Oakland A's take.
I'll tell you what, we haven't heard.
I don't know if we're on the air or not, and I'm not sure I care in a moment, but we are. Well, folks, that's the greatest open in the history of television, bar none.
So if you know what that is and where we recorded it, give us a call at 415-264-7106 and tell us. That's 415-264-7106. If you're right, you might just win a KALW t-shirt. We'll reveal the answer on next Thursday's Cross Currents. To find out more, head to our website, kalw.org. Click on Audiograph. And that does it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Isabel Angel, Ronnie Cohen, Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Angela Johnston, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Holly J. McDeed, Seth Samuel, Stephen Short, and Rachel Vasquez. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. Our line producer was Nina Gensler-Debs. Our senior producers are Julie Kane and Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. And thank you. We are listener-supported public radio. You're listening to Kim Rhea. She and her band Dream Dogs will perform this upcoming Monday night at the No Name Bar in Sausalito. Music starts at 8:30. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba. You were leaning on a parking lot.